Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing me with free samples. I don't know about where you live, but here in Columbus, allergy season has started back up again. I feel like I can usually muster through. However, allergies can turn a peaceful night's sleep into a battle of tossing and turning for me. Sleep is something that I highly prioritize, and nasal congestion, sneezing fits, and itchy eyes can disrupt my ability to one, fall asleep, and two, to stay asleep, leaving me fatigued in the morning, which is not great with three kids. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. Like I said, I used to muster through, but as I've gotten older, my allergies have gotten worse. And Claritin D has been a life changer when it comes to my day-to-day. Like I said, sleep is so important to me, and that's usually where I notice my allergies the most, laying down on my back and not being able to breathe. Thank goodness for Claritin D. So are you ready to live as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away, and you can find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter, and you don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Hello and welcome to the Minimalist Moms Podcast. I'm Megan.
And I'm Diane.
We are suburban moms trying to make room in our lives for what matters by getting rid of the clutter and living life with purpose. We hope you'll join us on the journey to think more and do with less. Today we welcome a special guest, Joshua Becker. Joshua is the founder and editor of Becoming Minimalist, a website dedicated to inspiring others to find more life by owning less. He is the best-selling author of The More of Less, the founder of two magazines, Simplify and Simply Money magazine, creator of an e-course called Uncluttered, and he also, if that's not enough, started the nonprofit The Hope Effect, which focuses on family-based solutions for orphans. We'll be talking with him today about his new book, which releases on December 18th, The Minimalist Home. And we think this is just the perfect tie a bow on the end of our A Minimalist Home series. We didn't even know his book was coming out, and it was titled the same thing. So it is just perfection all the way around.
All right. Well, before we get into our resource and moment of the week, we want to share a review. This says, a surprising seasonal depression cure. So this is my first time giving podcasts a chance because I love background noise, but don't really want my baby staring at the TV. And I'm kicking myself for not listening sooner. I love you both. I appreciate the relatability, thoughtfulness, and relaxed nature of minimalism your way. Genuinely thank you for you two getting me out of a funk. And this is from Avocadita.
Avocadita. Cute.
Yeah, so we so appreciate that, and I'm so glad that we could help in whatever way. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is a good point, that podcasts are a great way to keep your mommy mind busy while you're entertaining toddlers.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So do you want to start us with your minimalist moment of the week?
Sure. My moment is courtesy of Christmas. At the end of last Christmas season, I decluttered a lot. I thought I had decluttered a lot of our Christmas decorations, but I hadn't. So I got rid of, more than half of them. And this last week, I got out the Christmas decorations and wondered where the rest of the bins were. Like, I had forgotten how much I had decluttered. And literally, it took us 15 minutes to get out the three bins that we had left, plus the tree, and had it set up and ready to go. It was so not stressful. It was so awesome. I mean, I was really kind of, even though we have been decluttering for years and have been really trying to get all of our stuff in order, I did not expect it to be as easy as it was. And it was just a breath of fresh air and helped to start the season off right and not in a stressful mood.
That's really awesome. I just reached inside my bin and grabbed my candle.
Oh, that's right. You had one candle.
But I actually, this year, I added a little gnome Santa to my mantle.
Okay.
So I'm going all out.
Now, do you have a tree?
We will be getting a tree.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you did not have one last year, though.
No, we've had one every year. We just go cut it down. But we do have ornaments and whatnot. But I am slowly getting on the decoration train to where I feel like I need to start intentionally buying more decorations.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that goes.
All right.
All right. So my minimalist resource of the week is another podcast. And this podcast actually doesn't have to do with minimalism really whatsoever, but I felt like the episode this week did, and it's Risen Motherhood. It is a Christian podcast. I will preface by saying that, but this episode is called Wishlist Ignored, Loving the Giver More Than the Gift. And I think no matter what religion, even if you're an atheist, there's a lot that you could take away and just how to give people grace when we feel that they are maybe infringing on the rules that we have set up for our families and how we want to do gift giving. And really the most loving thing to do is just to accept it gracefully, and then you can do with the gift with what you may. But they kind of just deep dive into that. And I know for me, it really hit home because I feel like I can be a Scrooge with some of my relatives and just have these, not list of demands, but I can just, I feel like I go overboard and it appears that I'm not grateful or thankful. And so I felt like this kind of helped get my heart in the right space before we have all these gifts coming into our home. So yeah, this is the Risen Motherhood podcast on iTunes.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, hello everyone. And we are excited today to have Joshua Becker with us. And it's just an honor to have you here. We've talked about you many times on the podcast and now we actually have you on. It's so exciting.
Well, I'm excited to be here to defend myself. I don't know everything you've said, but I'm glad to finally
be able to speak for myself. All good.
It's good to be here. Thanks so much for the invitation, and I love talking about this stuff. So I look forward to talking about it with you guys.
Great. So we've kind of introed you with a broad overview of your bio, but why don't you tell us about yourself and your work?
I blog at a website, becomingminimalist.com. 10.5 years ago, I was introduced to minimalism by my neighbor, of all people. Not someone who was being a minimalist at all, but her daughter was. And so she was telling me about it and introducing me to the lifestyle. Yeah, 10.5 years ago was a long time ago, and there were not a lot of people writing about minimalism, although when I searched online, I found some people using the word, but I don't know if there were any websites at the time entirely devoted to it. I started becoming minimalist mostly just to journal what was happening in my life, what we were getting rid of and what we were keeping, what rooms we were going through, what we were learning. I never meant it to be anything more than just a place where I was writing and updating extended family around the country. It grew and grew. And so for the last 5.5 years, I've been writing and speaking about minimalism full time. I live now just outside Phoenix, Arizona in Peoria. My wife, we've been married for 19 years. My son is 16 and my daughter is 12, which means we started this journey when they were 5 and 2. So I've seen most of the ages, all the way through the process.
Oh, that's great. And we'll want to ask you about that a little later.
Mm-hmm. So you've been, as you said, speaking on minimalism for about 5.5 years and really writing about it for a decade now. So what made you decide that now is the time to do a step-by-step guide to decluttering the home?
Writing about it for a decade, that makes me sound old. That's hearing it. So I wrote a book 2.5 years ago called The More of Less, which is great. I love the book. It is a introduction to minimalism, and I wrote it for the purpose of introducing the world to minimalism and why people are owning less on purpose. And it's very much in line with what I blog about and what I think I do best and tend to do most naturally. When the book came out, I actually had a different book that I was thinking about writing about money, but my publisher came to me and said, hey, we really loved the More of Less, but we think you need to help people actually live out what you were promoting in the More of Less. The More of Less makes a great case for minimalism, but it doesn't offer like very practical steps for people to go through their homes. Mm-hmm. And I said, I think you are right. I get a lot of questions, and any article that I write about, you know, how to specifically tackle a project or a space or a room, tend to be the ones that do the best, because people want to own less, but it's difficult. It's hard. There's a small percentage of people that can rent a dumpster and throw out everything all weekend, or can hear the word minimalism and embrace it completely. But those tend to be pretty impulsive personalities. You know, people who tend to jump all the way in. There are other people that, you know, want to approach this a little bit more methodically and strategic, especially when you have a family, and when you're trying to navigate those aspects of it as well. So hence the Minimalist Home. I started an online course 3 years ago that 25,000 different people have used to declutter their home. And so many of the principles I talk about in that course, and some of the lessons that I've learned, the questions that keep coming up, the obstacles and hurdles that keep popping up, some of the stories I've heard from the course have become this book. And it's everything I think the subtitle says, a room-by-room guide to a decluttered, refocused life. It covers 18 specific spaces in the home, and people are really enjoying it who've seen the early copies of it, so I'm proud of it.
Oh, that's great. And this is Megan speaking, by the way, and I was one of those thousands of people that took your Uncluttered course, and it was so inspirational. Even if you didn't, you know, follow the tips or read all the material, just being in the kind of Facebook group that went along with it and seeing all the photos of people's decluttered spaces was so neat. It was so neat to experience that with a large group of people.
It's I made the course because I wanted to offer something for people who they've read the books, but they need something more. I always say the course offers everything that a book can't offer. So accountability and community, mm-hmm. opportunity to ask questions. Those are some of the things that went into the course. And the course even, like, it is it's the community, it's the accountability, it's the weekly challenges that tend to be very helpful. But even in the course, I don't get into the detail of spaces that I do in the Minimalist Home. You know, the Minimalist Home is, you know, start with these objects and tackle, you know, these shelves next, and like move specifically step by step through a room, through a space. And even in the Uncluttered course, I don't get into that much detail. So there's a difference between the two, but they definitely. The Minimalist Home couldn't have been written if it hadn't been for what I learned doing that course for so many years.
Oh, that's great. Well, why don't we dig into a little bit of the material in the book? We thought maybe we'd just give you a room, and you could give us like one big tip or one big pitfall that is specific to that room that you saw over and over, if you don't mind us putting you on the spot like that.
Okay, one tip per room. Okay, I'm ready.
All right, how about your living room / family room?
Decorations. I would look for decorations that can be removed. What I find happens in so many places is we put up so many decorations that the ones that have real meaning to us tend to be overshadowed and distracted. And so when we minimized our living room, family room, we got rid of just a lot of figurines and decorations that weren't there. And what was left, every single piece represents something important to us. And usually there's a story behind everything that we have remaining.
Awesome.
All right, next one is bedrooms.
Bedrooms. Remove everything that does not serve the purpose of the room. It's actually a pretty major theme in the book. Our lives have purposes, our homes have purposes, and each room should have a purpose as well. And the bedroom is the perfect example. Your bedroom is there for rest and for intimacy, and anything that has collected in your bedroom that doesn't serve those two purposes tends to just distract from them.
Absolutely. We've been going through a series here on the Minimalist Moms podcast of going room by room. So it's kind of perfect that your book comes out at the time that it's coming out, because we're just wrapping up the series. So we've gone around, and the space that we found that was most convoluted in what the purpose was ended up being really the master bedroom, because in family situations, sometimes you have the baby sleeping in there and it's not your rest and your retreat. Sometimes you have, you know, you have kids sleeping in there for a longer period of time than you would like, or it becomes the storage room for everything else because it's the only parents only room, and you don't want, you know, you have your breakables or whatever that's in there. And yeah, for some reason that we found that space was the most, the space where we wanted it to be a retreat the most often, but it ended up being more stressful. We'd wake up in the morning and we'd be surrounded with things that, you know, did not start our day out well.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting there. Some of those things are in your control. So, you know, we can control the things that we can control. Other things, I was just hearing, seasons of life, mm-hmm. you know, like if the baby's sleeping in there and that's how you need it or want it to be, that's still just a short season of life where maybe the purpose of the room has dual purpose for a period of time. So actually, seasons of life is a pretty big conversation in the book, and something I'm a pretty big fan of talking about and helping people think through.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Go ahead.
All right. Next room would be clothing closets and mudroom.
Clothing closets. I will say, here's my tip. Here's my thought. You will love owning fewer clothes far more than you think you will. I find whenever I challenge people to experiment with fewer clothing items in their closet, whether it's getting rid of half of their clothes or going down to 33 articles of clothing for a few weeks, I find that very few people hate it. Most people think this feels really good to have a closet that everything I see in there I like to wear. It's decluttered. It's not crammed. It's easier to get ready in the morning. I'm, you know, don't feel like I'm chasing fashions all the time. So I think most people genuinely enjoy owning fewer clothes far more than they think they will.
I think Megan and I can both attest to that because she's really into the capsule wardrobe, and you've done Courtney Carver's challenge before.
Yes, yeah. And we've had Courtney Carver on. She is amazing. You mentioned her in your book. So just side question then, what does your wardrobe look like, or how many, if you even have like a number that you stick to?
Yep, I don't remember the number what I started. I usually think maybe, I don't know, 100 plus items in my closet and drawers. And the first time I minimized, I cut it in half. And it wasn't all that difficult. Went down to maybe 60 items or so. And then, yes, Courtney Carver had just started her Project 333, where the experiment is 33 articles of clothing for 3 months. And it doesn't count underwear, and it doesn't count exercise wear, but it counts everything else. And as she would say, it's not forever. It's just an experiment. Like, just try it out for 3 months, see what you learn. You literally have nothing to lose by trying it out. Mm-hmm. And I saw it and I'm like, I'm in. I'm going to give it a shot, even though I had no idea how I would be able to accomplish it. But yeah, just took a closer look at my closet and thought a little bit more strategically about what I actually liked wearing, which things I wore most often out of the 60, and cut it down to 33 and loved it. And so I'm usually in that range, somewhere between 33 to 40. A shirt wears out and you get a new one and you don't get rid of the old one right away. But about 4 pairs of pants. I tend to wear V-neck t-shirts most days, some long sleeve shirts, a couple pairs of different shoes. I tell the story in the book of Alice Gregory, who really kind of changed my thinking on clothing and the whole capsule wardrobe uniform look. And she said it was very iconic to have a style that you are known for and tend to stick to. And I thought, yes, that's the right word. It's not boring. It's iconic. People know what you're going to look like. And when I moved to Arizona 7 years ago. So I've been wearing the same style of clothes for a couple of years when I moved, kind of that V-neck t-shirt and khaki pants. My last day where I was working up there, everyone mm-hmm. wore that outfit. They wore a V-neck t-shirt and khaki pants. And I'm like, there you go. I'm kind of known for wearing something. I like that.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that concept of being an icon. Mm-hmm. What's our next space? Let's see. Bathrooms and laundry room.
Clear surfaces. That applies to most rooms. Bedrooms clearing off the dresser surface and kitchen clearing off counters. But the bathroom, I think, is the one where you experience the benefits a little bit more of having a clear surface. It's usually a little bit smaller space and knocking tubes over and toothbrushes and hand soap dispensers. Just having a clear space as possible tends to make getting ready in the morning that much more enjoyable.
And for the kitchen?
I think the kitchen tends to be a pretty good example of a space where we collect more tools than we need. So I can remember minimizing my kitchen, and there was like a egg yolk separator, which we had used once because something we were baking had called for it. So we went out and got it. And I remember looking at it, thinking to myself, I bet a spoon can probably do this exact same thing. And so Mark Bittman wrote an article in the New York Times called A No-Frills Kitchen Still Cooks. And I included it in the book because it was very helpful to me in the process, where he just has a pretty short list of all the staple items that you need in a kitchen in order to cook any dish that you want. Since then, I've learned that it works just fine, that a lot of these single-use items that we collect tend to get in the way more than anything else. But the kitchen tends to be a pretty good example where we collect far more tools than we need. And they end up making the process less fun. You know, I much prefer having clear spaces and drawers with things that are easy to access. It makes cooking more enjoyable to me than fumbling through drawers to find the things that I need or want.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Any tips or pitfalls for the dining room?
The dining room is another room where I talk about purposes. You know, what is the point of your dining room? And there have been plenty of dining rooms that I have tried to enjoy a meal in, but they were so full of furniture and china hutches and that it was hard to maneuver and move around in there, much less enjoy space and enjoy a meal. So again, just looking at your dining room with a new eye, do the things in here really really contribute to using this space effectively and enjoying family and enjoying company around a meal? Or are there some things in here that are just getting in the way of us using this room to accomplish that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Doing that shimmy around the person that's next mm-hmm. to you to try to get out from around the table. I totally get that.
Which may be okay if it's a result of having so many people over that you're crowded around the table. Like that's a good feeling because you're using the space in the room for what it is. But when it's furniture and you got to get your way mm-hmm. through the furniture, there's just tends to be a little different, feeling to it.
Right. All right. Let's move on to home office.
Oh, home office is a tough one. I should probably mention at this point that the book takes people easiest to hardest through their homes, that I would never tell someone to start in the home office or start in the storage or the garage, but to start easy and work your way up to some of those spaces. The home office, you need to keep far less paper than you think you need to keep. I list at least for the for what some of the U.S. regulations are, some of the guidelines are for what paper we need to keep and what we can get rid of. Even the paper that we do keep, we can scan in and store digitally rather than in paper.
Yes, we can get swallowed in paper. Just from my experience with kids coming home with stuff in their backpack, you can get swallowed in papers.
I was at the library yesterday, and a man wanted to hand me a flyer for a holiday event. And I was like, can I just take a picture of it? And he gave me a strange look. But now it's digital on my phone, and I don't forget the date. So
there we go.
Yeah.
It's a good deal. Okay, next space is storage or hobby room?
Storage spaces start with the large items that you can remove, because they tend to take a lot of time and effort to work through, basements and attics and garages. But I think when we start by finding large items that we can take out of the space first, it opens up space. We feel like we're getting things done because the room starts to feel differently. And so I encourage people to start looking at those things first before you get into, you know, ripping open the cardboard boxes from high school, and all the memories and emotions are going to come flooding while you go through that.
Yeah, absolutely. We went through a process. We renovated our basement. And so we went through the whole, we had to clear the entire thing out to do that. And we tried not to put anything back down there that we didn't want to live there, but there are still some projects that we went through a lot and got rid of a lot. But I feel like that's where it's taken the longest time, and we're still going through, you know, the archives of photos and boxes of, like you said, memorabilia from high school and things that you want to save, but you're not, or just have so much emotional attachment to them that you don't feel right getting rid of them, but you're not quite sure what to do with them. And it's just hard decisions all around.
Indeed. I believe to be true what I always say, that less is better, even there. That you don't have to, you know, less is different than none. You don't have to get rid of all your sentimental objects and emotional attachments, but usually I think when you just hold on to a few things that really represent that time of your life, it tends to honor it a little bit more than holding on to boxes and boxes of stuff that you're just going to dread having to go through at some point in your life.
Mm-hmm. Well,
what
said.
Is that quote? It's, if everything's your favorite thing, then nothing's your favorite thing.
That's good.
That's true. Last space, garage and yard.
Garage and yard. You will love having a decluttered garage, and your neighbors will love if you declutter your yard. If you're the neighbor that's leaving a lot of stuff out in your yard, your neighbors will appreciate you taking the time to clean it up and get rid of most of it. The garage is usually the first impression that you have when you get home. You pull into the garage, and if your garage is full, packed full of things, or you can't even park your car in your garage, it's like the visual reminder when you get home that I have too much stuff and I need to go through it. And to have that be the first impression every time you come home, I don't know, probably not the right mood you want to be in when you're walking home to be present with your family, to be reminded of a lot of undone work and projects. So as far as tips, same thing in the garage that I mentioned, the storage room. Look for big items that you can remove quickly and start to see some of that space clear up, and that will motivate you to tackle some of the smaller spaces as well. Always one project at a time, though, right? One bird by bird, corner by corner, shelf by shelf is how we get through it.
I'm curious as to why garage and yard were at the end of your list as far as things from easiest to hardest. Because as you said, you are coming home to it every day. And the things in the garage, maybe some people use them as storage spaces. So there might be those emotional things or things that are hard to get rid of. But for the most part, I feel like things in the garage are utilitarian or tools and things that aren't necessarily maybe difficult to go through. And then if you do that earlier on, maybe it kind of rejuvenates you. You feel better. You look better to the outside world. I don't know. What's your thought on that? Why did you put it down at the bottom of the list?
Well, probably three reasons. Number one, that that was the order that I did the home. We did the garage. So probably the least important of the three reasons. The second reason was we worked inside to outside. So there's kind of just a natural physical progression of doing the most lived in spaces and then hitting some of the other rooms in your home. And then ultimately kind of moving your way out from the garage into the yard. And the third reason is in my case and in a lot of other people's cases, the garage becomes the place where a lot of minimized items end up, right? They're no longer in my living room or they're no longer in my basement, but I've just moved them out into the garage to deal with them one final time. I think that happens for a lot of people. And so didn't seem to make much sense to do the garage earlier and then go do your basement where you're just going to move a whole bunch more things out into your garage that need to be dealt with.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
All right, so if you want to dive deeper into some of these things that we just talked about, obviously pick up Joshua's book because he has some great advice in there. But I did want to ask you, one of the most asked questions that we get is, how do we keep toys under control? So we are a mommy podcast, and we wanted to ask you about that.
What? People ask about that? I can't imagine. Oh, heavens. Yeah, I speak to a lot of moms groups, and the first question usually is either what do I do with my husband's stuff or what do I do with my kid's stuff? Look, the first answer is always you can't start with your kid's stuff. It is entirely unfair for you to read a book about minimalism or to listen to a podcast about minimalism and go home and make your kids get rid of all their things. You've got to do your own stuff. You've got to do your own work. Set the example for them. Even experience some of the emotions that come with getting rid of stuff so you can help them navigate them, allow them to ask questions. I'm a big fan of over-explaining to children, and so explain to them why you're getting rid of stuff. And then when you eventually do get to their rooms and their toys in adult ways, explain, hey, you know, we have a limited amount of money and limited amount of time. And we've just decided that family's going to focus more on these things rather than owning a lot of stuff and having a lot of stuff around. And we think that owning less allows us to do more of that. And then in the very practical way, when it comes to kids, boundaries, physical boundaries, looking for them and implementing them in almost all areas, toys, clothes, collections, arts and crafts items, like almost always sporting equipment, like almost always you can set a physical space. That's what we did with my son. He had like a whole toy room full of toys when we started this, and we said, okay, you can keep as many toys as you want that fit against this wall. And you get to decide which toys you're going to keep, but they just have to fit in this space. And eventually we moved into a smaller house, and so my daughter, it became the closet. You can have as many toys as you want that fit in the closet, or arts and crafts that fit in this plastic bin, collections that fit in this drawer. And I think that really empowers kids to make those decisions, which is helpful. I mean, it's a helpful skill, right? I mean, all of life is deciding what to fit into our limited space and time, and what's really important. So learning that early is good for kids. And I think it's good for kids to hear no, as well. So it's not a hard thing for me. It's not a hard thing for me to tell my kids no, because I think it's good for them to hear. And I don't know, kids who get everything they want don't usually turn out to be the most thoughtful in setting boundaries when they get older.
It's a very judicious way to say that. It's very kind. So the holidays are among us. Any advice for gift giving and family members in the way that you generally, meaning the mom or the dad, generally makes the gift list or the request of grandparents and other relatives for what you can get the kids for Christmas? And in our experience, they just They love them so much, and it is such a blessing to have so many relatives that love your children, but they tend to express that love by giving many, many gifts. Yeah. So any advice on how to handle that?
Yeah, that's true. That's a good way to put it. First, control what you can control. So if you're worried about a lot of gift clutter coming into your home from grandparents and relatives and cousins and extended family, then, I mean, you could still control what you give to your kids and either, you know, limiting the number or just getting a few really nice gifts rather than a lot of little ones, especially if they're going to be getting gifts all holiday season long. I think it becomes a little bit easier to set new expectations and new traditions within your immediate family. When it comes to extended family, I agreed with what you said. Like, it is a blessing to have extended family want to express love. And I've never wanted to take away that opportunity from them. So I'm not a give my kids no gifts type of parent, because they want to show love, and I can steer them, right? I can steer them into different kinds of gifts, needs over wants. So kids are growing and changing and need new size shoes and coats and clothes. And that doesn't mean they have to get them brown socks or something, but my son usually gets like a Tom Brady football jersey. You know, like, he needs clothes, but this is something special that, you know, we wouldn't normally get for him otherwise. So needs over wants, quality over quantity, again, experiences over possessions, consumables over clutter. Those are some of the things that we can ask for from relatives, extended family. Usually a gift list is very helpful in these ways. Like, here's some things my kids are getting into and are really enjoying. Here's some experiences they would like to have. You can help us out by giving those gifts. Two thoughts to add to this. Number one, grandparents usually don't care the first time you ask for new idea with a new gift list. Like, you know, a little patience and grace is helpful and kind, and maybe they won't catch it the first year or the second year, but, you know, the third or fourth year of saying, no, I'm serious. These are the kind of things that we would like for our kids. They start to catch on a little bit more. And the other thing is this, so we started becoming minimalist in May, and then we had a Christmas coming up in December. And so we had spent 6 months of getting rid of things, and I was really worried about the upcoming holiday season and was it going to set me back, all the work that I had done. And what I found was, because I had minimized and had removed a lot of kids' stuff and other things from our home, just clutter from our house, Christmas didn't feel as burdensome. When you add clutter on top of already cluttered spaces, then it becomes really overwhelming and we don't even know how to begin getting rid of it. But when we have all the toys down to, you know, a manageable all against that wall over there, then new toys come in at Christmas and you're like, okay, there was some room to add some new things into this room anyway, and let's test it out for 3 or 4 months and see which toys get used and which ones don't, and remove some of the unused ones a little bit later on down the road.
That's all really great advice. I feel like I need to use a little bit of this, because I can be a Scrooge around the holidays, and so I think I need to start giving my in-laws a little bit more grace. And I like the idea of, if things are coming into the home, maybe getting rid of a few things. Like, if 4 gifts come into the home, let's get rid of 4 gifts. But I don't know if that's too regimented as well. What would you say about that?
I think if it works for you, then I think people should do it. It's never worked for me. Like, I've never been a one in, one out guy, just because I don't know if I'm not disciplined enough to do it. I tend to be more like, when you ask how many articles of clothing I had, and I'm like, I don't know, somewhere between 33 and 40, because I'll bring something in and I don't feel like I have to take something else out. But eventually it feels like, gosh, it just feels like there's more clothes in here than need to be. Let's go back through it and let's get rid of some of the things that don't need to be around. And so we do the same with, like, toys for the kids. You know, you get it to a nice manageable space and a birthday happens or a holiday happens. And I'm not like, now I have to get rid of that many toys. But a few months down the road and a few more things enter into the home, and like, I think it's time to go back through this again and make sure everything's fitting in the spaces that we decided would be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I feel like it also kind of goes with the literal seasons. You were talking about seasons of life, but it also kind of goes with the literal seasons. And in January, we feel like that new, fresh, like, let's get the year started mm-hmm. right season. And we want to clean things out and you know, move past the holidays and help our houses to feel fresh and new. And then I feel like also when after the summer and the school year starting, we're like, oh, new beginnings. Let's, you know, get this place ready for a new schedule and schools to start and all of that. So there's definitely kind of maybe moving with that momentum too. Mm-hmm. Maybe think of it that way. Great. Well, you, Josh, I don't think we've told you this before. You are like our first dad, minimalist dad on the podcast. So.
Oh my goodness. I feel extra honored now.
Yes. So we were wondering if you have any thoughts on being the first person to bring kind of minimalism to your family, or advice for moms to maybe get dads on the minimalist train.
Yes. Good question. I will answer this specifically, but it'll also be in a general way. I think whenever we're trying to get a spouse, a partner on board with minimalism and owning less, I think it's always important to frame the conversation in a way that they would resonate with. So the reason you became a minimalist, the reason you want to own less, the felt needs that you're experiencing might be different than what would convince your spouse or partner to embrace minimalism. And that could be something, not to be too overly generalistic, but if I was at this moment in time, if the woman in the home is doing a lot of the taking care of the home, and whether they work or not, just a lot of that load is falling on their shoulders, then yes, I want to own less stuff so that taking care of the home and taking care of the family is easier for me to do. I can see why this is zapping so much of my time. If the husband doesn't do a lot of that around the house, then you're going to have a hard time convincing him that that's the reason you need to own less stuff. So it might be, you know, you're always worried about money and providing for the family. I'm trying to make these changes of owning less and becoming minimalist so that we can overcome some of that stress in our lives, so that we can do more things as a family. We can travel more as a family. You can, there's less stress at home, so you can focus more on the work that you're doing outside the home. Like, some of these reasons, again, in an overly generalistic way, of course, might resonate with the other spouse or partner in the relationship, depending on what your specific home looks like, what their passions are, what their hobbies are, what's important to them.
Great.
How'd I do? Did I walk that line?
Yes,
okay?
You did very well.
Okay. Okay. Good. It's beyond, like, it's not just moms and dads. Like, I'm speaking to a group of high school students this coming summer, like several thousand of them. And I know that I can't have the same conversation with them that I have with parents, right? Where parents is like, let's own less so we can focus more on our kids and spend less time cleaning and shopping and managing and maintaining things. And like, a high school student doesn't feel that burden. And so how do you convince them of the benefits of owning less and what it might mean for their life is a different conversation than trying to convince a parent or someone who's managing a house or household.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true. Great. Well, I mean, we cannot thank you enough for being here. As we wrap up, we were wondering if you tell our listeners, if they want to learn more, where they can get your book, where they can find you online.
Sure. Becomingminimalist.com is home base for anything and everything I do. And you can find links to social media and everything right there. The book is called The Minimalist Home, Room by Room Guide to a Decluttered, Refocused Life. It comes out on Tuesday, December 18th. And available for pre-order everywhere, but will certainly be available in bookstores and online on that day and during that week. So thanks so much. And it's makes a great Christmas gift. Do I get to say that? Makes a great Christmas
gift. Yeah. No, you can. I think it's great timing because, like we said, in January, everybody's wanting to start those New Year's resolutions, mm-hmm. clear their spaces out, start fresh and new. And this book maybe a way to get them there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you guys do great work. Thanks so much for spreading this message and helping moms, helping families out. Good for you. I appreciate the invitation and getting to be on the show with you guys.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Before we finish out this episode, this is Megan talking. I wanted to make a little announcement. I have, over the course of the last 2 years, gone from stay-at-home mommy life to working mommy life, and now working full-time mommy life, and I have reached the point where I just need to take a little break, and I hope you all understand. So I'm not sure for how long it will be, but I'm going to take a little hiatus and I'm going to leave this podcast in the very capable hands of Diane. She will be posting here and there. It may not be as regular though as you're used to. So we wanted to let you know that. And you can, in the meantime, I will still be active. You can find me on Instagram at Megan Erickson. That's MEGANERICSON. And I will be listening in, as you guys will be, to what Diane has for us.
And I'm really sad to see you step away for this period of time, but I know how much it's needed in this busy time and season of your life. But as we've talked about, you're going to join in when you can, and you'll be refreshed and rejuvenated after this little break. So we will miss you, and I hope that I can live up to what we've created together here in the next few months.
Oh, you will. You're very capable hands. Well, we invite you, as always, to keep this conversation going by visiting our website at minimalistmomspodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Minimalist Moms Podcast. And you can text the word minimalist to 444-999 to get an email every time we post a new episode. Thank you for joining us on this journey. We wish you